from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from my basement bunker. There appears to be another snowstorm hitting northeast Pennsylvania. So it'll be me and Mr. Henderson broadcasting out of our Williamsport bureau. I think he's in a barn out behind his house. How you doing, Matt?
I am, Bill. I'm in the North 40 in the barn. Like you mentioned, another storm, not just northeast, but across the United States. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about that. So glad to be here today and looking forward to the conversation.
Well, as always, and we want to just give a quick shout out to DC Taylor keeping us on the air. I think he's even broadcasting from his home studio today, and we appreciate it. And of course, Rusty Fender will be joining us in a little bit. He's, as I like to say these days, on assignment doing something with NASA or space or satellites or something. But of course, he will be in when it's time for Fender's Fast Facts. And Matt, you alluded to what's going on across the country, quite frankly, but mainly focused in Texas, as they were probably the most unprepared for the cold weather and are hit the hardest with power grid failures compared to other parts of the country. I do want to highlight, coming up in the second and third segment of the program, Alex Epstein, an energy philosopher, I believe he calls himself, went live Tuesday this week to discuss what's going on with the Texas energy grid in real time. And I followed along, watched his presentation. It was great. So we're going to play a chunk of that in the second and the third as this week's guest, because I wouldn't do justice to what Alex and his guests were able to share. But in the short run, we'll cover it a little bit. And I have a couple of national stories for us to discuss, Matt. But Texas, the long and short of it is that grid is built for hot summers, not cold winters. And I think when this cold rolled in there and it hit pretty hard, you saw a catastrophic failure of certain energy sources. And it just kind of cascaded into a bigger setup, because up here in the north, we're just used to it. I mean, I joke, I'm thick-skinned, so going outside in 20-degree weather without a coat on isn't as big of a deal as per se, a Texan or a Oklahomian down there. But the other reality is they rely too much on electricity, and it's failing them right now. Matt?
It is, and, you know, when – you know, policy, you know, is putting people's lives and livelihood at risk. And it's just not right. And like you said, you've seen the long lines at the grocery stores, people looking for food with their flashlight phones. Unfortunately, you know, you've seen some casualties where people are bringing in, you know, their charcoal, or their grills in the house because they have no source of heat. And, you know, they've got young kids and they've got, you know, people just trying to keep warm. So it is. And I think it highlights how policy, I think, at times cannot help us out. And are we ready for, kind of government, I guess, mandating which way we go versus a free market policy with our energy, solving our energy needs? So.
No, and we could spend, and we probably will spend shows and shows and shows on this discussing this, but the long and short of it is I don't think there's a simple solution of what's happening here. I know a lot of people on one side want to say it's all green energy's fault. Other people want to say it's the fossil fuels' fault. Others want to say it's DC's fault. So the answer is it's probably a lot of bad decisions that never came to light until where we are today. The one thing I can tell you, and I'll stand by this statement, is the fossil fuel industry that does exist in Texas is doing the lion's share of the work in terms of producing the power to go. And that's indisputable. I know some people are going to say, well, the wind and solar, even though they froze up, they only amount for a small part of the grid. And that, you know, isn't really that big of a deal, yada, yada, yada. But again, at the end of the day here, we know the truth. Texas is a leader in wind and solar. It's a great thing for the summer months when they need that extra energy, that affordable, you know, abundant renewable energy. But the reality here is they need heat, and electricity from heat is very taxing on the system, and that natural gas needs to go to other things as well. And I think the combination of those things is quite disastrous. But I will say, if you look at the data, and your brother Pat, Matt, has been publishing some of that data as well. Natural gas is up, and it's doing everything it can to help provide the power they need. One of the reasons why natural gas can't do more is, and I'm more than willing to talk about this because we do it all the time on the show, is this discussion of reliable versus unreliables, or rather wind and solar being, you know, a main staple in the energy grid. And it's proven that it really can't be a main staple.
Yeah.
And we need to reevaluate that.
Right. And Bill, you bring up a point, you know, it's renewables, I guess, are a small percentage, you know, 25%, I believe I saw a number, but say 2025, I guess, as long as you're not one of the four, or one of the five, you know, one in five people that depends on it, so to speak, you know, it's okay. But like you said, the reliability has to be there. And as you mentioned, you know, my brother, I've seen, and we've all, I think, seen the chart out there, you know, with the facts, you know, showing, you know, the different colors in this chart that natural gas has increased its use, you know, for electricity during this cold snap that, you know, looks like we're getting out of here as this weekend continues. But, you know, be hopefully, you know, this is another opportunity, not just, you know, for solar, renewables, natural gas, whatever side you're on, but to your comment and your point of reliability, you know, 10 years ago, you know, a cold snap went through, a wind, you know, a snowstorm went through Texas. And, you know, unfortunately, then there's only a day or two, but there's a lot of reports and studies that said, hey, you know, we're not prepared. We got to be prepared because something worse may come along. And unfortunately, here it is. And it's a prolonged, you know, not just 24, 48 hours, but, you know, a week long cold snap. And like I said, we're not through they're not through it. And, you know, we all feel for them because, you know, the food disruptions, the water disruptions, you know, you see the frozen pipes, you know, they're going to be digging out of this and dealing with the consequences for years. So hopefully, you know, there's a lot of lessons learned and, you know, not just from an energy policy standpoint, but preparedness standpoint as well.
And I just like to add, I pulled up here because people are probably wondering, the PJM grid that we're in, which our listeners primarily are in, though we do have some people across the country and even across the world. PJM is one of the largest grids in the world. Texas is one of the few kind of states, if you would, that have their own state-run grid. Now, granted, Texas is a huge state, so they run their own grid. New York runs its own grid. Other countries run their own grid. So what I'm getting at is PJM is very diverse. It's very large, and it's actually a net exporter of power. And a lot of reasons why, and I don't think people appreciate this, is why people's power is probably aren't turning back on down there, even though they keep saying they're bringing back on megawatts and generation and different things. Grids work best when they're producing more power than you need, not trying to inch back up to what you need or to meet the, you know, meet the bare minimum. And just to put it in perspective, here today as we record, PJM is projecting out about 122,000 megawatts of power for the day. And I noticed that, and I check this stuff every day, but I noticed that's up about between 10 and 20,000 megawatts from earlier in the week. And I think that has a lot to do with PJM is probably kicking power to the next grids over. Because, again, we have an abundance of power. I think over the summer, I saw our total megawattage hit like 160,000 megawatts. So that we still have additional capacity that we're not using. But getting back to the energy portfolio, about 40,000 megawatts is coal here in PJM, 33,000 is nuclear. Those numbers very rarely change. The one that changes the most is gas, and we're about 37,000 megawatts of power from gas. That's the largest, you know, share here. Well, coal is, but the largest changing share, because gas can ramp up, it can ramp down. Noticeably absent is the renewables. Renewables are only accounting for about 5,000 to 6,000 megawatts of power out of that 122,000. But I did find this interesting. I noticed oil starting to be dispatched again across the PJM grid, which again leads me to believe that that probably has more to do with trying to support neighboring grids through this difficult time. But it's interesting to see how interconnected the system is, how a diverse portfolio like we have up here in PJM. And quite frankly, even though we talk about it and we make, you know, millions, if not billions of dollars of investment in renewables across PJM, the reality is renewables amount to such a small fraction of what we actually need. So we're just in a better spot, quite frankly. Yeah. And I want to add one last comment, Matt. What PJM has, which Texas probably doesn't have, is a lot of people that have direct heating sources of natural gas, oil, propane, coal, wood. So we're not burdening the electric grid for all of our heating needs, which Texas clearly is doing.
Right. And good points. And on that, I mean, I'm, you know, in the heating oil, you know, where I'm at still, unfortunately. But yeah, and you know, as you say those comments, and you know, people listen or people hear, and as we always get, oh, you're anti. It's not. It's not there. We need the reliability. So, you know, when we've got the polar vortex here, you know, every year it seems to be, we're ready. You know, we don't have, you know, these issues here in Pennsylvania, or like you mentioned, across the grid there. So I think, you know, some lessons learned out there, hopefully. And like I said, going before it, hopefully, you know, it's not just a matter of who's to blame in Texas. You know, let's find the mistakes and let's find how you can prepare and get it ready for the future so that, you know, these issues don't happen. So.
Certainly is. Well, let's cover a couple of news stories here before we hit Fender's Fast Facts. Let's go to the other side of the country, California. Newsom, Governor Newsom, who's under a pretty big recall effort right now. We'll see if it happens. And if you recall, I do remember when I don't remember the name of the governor got recalled, but that's how Arnold Schwarzenegger ended up becoming governor, because there was a recall in California. I'm the governor. But Newsom's calling for a fracking ban that could lead to a recall headache. Political reports that a proposed fracking ban promise may complicate Governor Gavin Newsom's political calculations as his recall campaign gains steam. When announcing the executive order in September, he said fracking counts for less than 2% of the state's fossil fuel production, a number the oil industry has said is more closer to 17%, which could up the ante for how significant a fracking ban would be. Another oil industry representative pointed to the state's existing regulations on fracking. If this is an administration that believes in science and champions climate, then ensuring Californians get their energy from local oil produced under the toughest standards on the planet is the best choice for the environment and the economy. So, yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that one, Matt? Do you see Newsom navigating this political conundrum he finds himself in?
Well, it's interesting. You know, one person or one group says 2%, one says 17%. I think, you know, those numbers can be validated rather quickly. But, you know, part of what I was thinking we had to do is bring our good friend Mr. Rob Bowler on here, as, you know, his company has dabbled in the Texas area before, or I'm sorry, the California area before. But yeah, I think, you know, like you mentioned, he's under scrutiny and, you know, a recall vote, or, you know, his political career is in turmoil, to say the least. But it would be very interesting, you know, see what they do. You know, we know New York's had their fracking ban, you know, officially, I guess, about 10 years, 11 years. And, you know, we know what that impact would be, just even if it's a small percentage, you know, from that 5 to 10%, you know, the jobs. And then you got to look at from the reliability of, you know, what we're talking about earlier, the energy and power out there. So it'd be interesting to follow. And I'm sure we will, as despite his best efforts, he's going to continue to be a frontline news article across the country.
And I just like to highlight that California does produce a significant amount of oil and natural gas, and it's almost all consumed in the state. I mean, that's the crazy thing. Like, you don't really think of, say, California as a net exporter of the energy because they really haven't expanded their production, but it's because California's needs are so great, they really consume everything they do produce. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is that's probably going to get lost in this as we see what actually happens from the outfall of the storm, is the impact it's going to have on manufacturing and even petrochemical developments, right? Some of these facilities down along the Gulf Coast had to shut down, not because the cold was preventing them from operating, but because the grid needed the power, right? So they were doing the selfless thing, shutting these plants down so they're not consuming power. They're, you know, either pushing power back into the grid or allowing that power to go somewhere else. But the reality is these plants don't start up and stop on a dime, and they typically run 24/7, 365, or as close to 365 as you can be. So I am curious to see, and we might have to get our friend Tom Gelrich back on the program to talk about the impact that's going to be. And I'm talking everything from plastic products to cleaning products. And especially in this COVID environment that we find ourselves in, are we going to see our supply chains over the next couple of weeks or months get hurt because of this disruption? What are your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, and, you know, I think it just highlights the, you know, the need for diversity in terms of, you know, where we develop and where is our, you know, chemical hub. Or, you know, we've talked numerous times. There's been, you know, study after study about the Appalachian Basin becoming the next petrochemical hub. It would never be the size of the Gulf Coast area, but I think it should be. You know, our local leaders, economic development leaders ought to be pointing and saying, hey, listen, you know, that makes the Appalachian Basin a little bit more favorable. You know, we have the resource, you know, we have the reliability, you know, we can withstand, you know, we're used to this type of weather, you know, so come here. You know, I mean, we know the Shell facility and there's some others in this region. And then, of course, you know, some of the, as you mentioned, Tom Gelrich has talked about some of these, say, smaller plants, you know, still $500 million, but you know, some other large investments out there. But to your point, you know, that they're shutting down, you know, they're trying to conserve energy, trying, like you said, helping their neighbors out. But that impact is going to be felt, you know, because they're not producing products and needs that are the things that are needed, components that are needed now. So, yeah, that ripple effect, you know, might be days, weeks away. But I think, again, it continues to point to, this is a great opportunity for the basin, and let's capitalize on it and trying to keep people considering coming to this area for, you know, for these jobs, this economic development, the, you know, the taxes that it brings in, and, you know, all of the positives around it.
Certainly. And I got one more story here before we hit Fender's Fast Facts. EPA to scrap Obama-era power plant rule, E&E News reports, the Biden administration has told states it won't revive the Obama-era requirements for cutting greenhouse gas emissions from power plants amid lingering confusion about a federal court overturning the Trump EPA efforts on the Affordable Clean Energy rules. A January 19 ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia struck down the ACE rule, but did not put the 2015 Clean Power Plan back in force. So I find it interesting that the Biden administration has the opportunity to reenact the Obama-era regulations that Trump cut, but he's choosing not to do it. So I'm wondering why. And, you know, I thought, you know, this would be a continuation. In some ways it is, obviously, of Obama's presidency. But it's also interesting what he has here. I would have to go out on a limb and say it's probably some sort of union connection and or the heat that he's been taking from labor as it relates to shutting down the Keystone Pipeline and some other infrastructure projects and not really having the jobs to replace it yet. Because I know this has been a, you know, push by those types of entities that have a lot of workforce employed at those facilities.
Yeah, I just jump in real quick. I'd have to agree with you, Bill, because I think he's the Obama 2.0 administration is getting more pushback, like I said, especially from the unions than anticipated. You know, just, you know, not just from the Keystone, but some of his policies or discussion or talking points around manufacturing and, you know, maybe not his, say, willingness to capitalize on bringing some of that back, reshoring that back to the U.S. So it is interesting. It's interesting. Maybe it's a positive that there's some voices in the administration saying, hey, let's slow down a little bit. Maybe let's have a, you know, a good discussion from, you know, from say, all sides, all angles, and, you know, do what's best for everybody.
It certainly is, Matt. It certainly is. Well, it's Fender's Fast Facts time. Rusty, what do you have for us, buddy?
And thanks, Bill. And today is an important date. Well, this weekend, actually, the 21st, a very important date in broadcast, I guess, broadcast events. It was the first time in 1988, so that was 33 years ago, that the televangelists became a big part of the everyday vernacular, because Jimmy Swaggart, one of the foremost televangelists of all time, came out and actually confessed on network television all his sins and the fact that that his organization was using money and funds given to the church for inappropriate ways and for airplanes and for prostitutes and other things, I guess, that go against what they stand for. So a very important day. So we figure we take a look back today at the history of televangelists. And DC, this is pretty interesting because televangelists, of course, did not exist before television.
Right.
So it's a rather new medium.
Sure.
So some of the interesting things, DC, setting up a church is incredibly easy. All you really need, you have to select a director, you pick a name, you outline your church mission statement, and then you file, after you apply for your EIN, you file and obtain a federal tax exempt status with the IRS. So all these churches, there's no taxes, means more money for them. So it's about 25 minutes in paperwork for millions of dollars in benefits. Truly incredible.
Yeah.
The prosperity gospel reaches deep into believers' pockets. If it sounds too good to be true, as we all know, it usually is. The prosperity gospel on which Jimmy Swaggart and Oral Roberts, a lot of these televangelists, was based, is that you give money to the church's donation plate as it's being passed around during church. Well, then you gave it on television with an 800 number, and 8 out of 10 credit cards were actually hacked in those days, and more funds were actually deducted than the person wanted to be.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you can't trust your church, who you're going to trust, right? Finances, often spent on extravagant luxury items. It is shocking, of course, in the days of Jimmy Swaggart, a $50 million jet. He had 13 mansions and $100,000 spent on mobile homes and grooming for dogs. It's a lot of dough to spend on dogs. It's amazing. The churches are scamming the IRS indirectly. It is a tax-exempt organization, much like education. But, of course, less money for the government equals more money for the people seeking to expand their religious empire. A lot of folks have been involved in intimate scandals. Bob Coy, he was married with 2 teenage children, discovered to have an extramarital affairs and an intensive porn habit to the tune of $50,000 a week in porn.
Jeez.
I'm often giving people second chances on things like that. But Bob Larson of television fame, he and his secretary were caught heading into a Disney yacht club in the Florida arm in arm, and of course many others. And speaking of others, DC, who was the first televangelist to really pay the price in exorbitant living, exorbitant spending, and the fall of the demise of his television empire? Do you recall that?
The first name that pops into my mind, I'm not even sure if he was I'm going with Jim Baker.
Absolutely right. Once again, Jim Baker, truly incredible. He was the richest, and he also took a beating by being sentenced to 45 years in prison. Of course, we all know Tammy Baker, his wife, with the extravagant makeup and all that.
Yeah.
But 45 years in prison. He had the tune of $13 million a year incoming, D.C., and that was back in the 80s when $13 million was a lot more than $13 million is today in 2021.
Sure.
So a little bit about the places and the preachers and the services that they gave. The televangelists this weekend featured the Jimmy Swaggart scandal back in 1988. And those are the fast facts this week, DC.
All right. Thank you for that, Rusty. And this is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health vision. Everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you, somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. In the first segment, Matt and I did the best job we could to discuss and inform you on what's going on, say, in the Texas power market here. But earlier this week, Alex Epstein, he's the founder of the Center for Industrial Progress, the co-founder for the Thoughtful Community, and the author of The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. He went live with some energy experts on YouTube. I caught sections of it and really enjoyed what he had to share. They were discussing what's actually going on in Texas, why it's happening, and what can be done proactively to prevent it in the future. And I thought, why not? Let's just share that here today. So we'll play sections of that over the next two segments of the show. Hopefully you'll learn a few things, and Matt and I will be discussing it next week further, and I'm sure for the next couple of weeks on the program. But enjoy Alex Epstein's comments on what's going on currently in Texas.
You know, the real crisis and tragedy we're having in Texas. And I think it's really important to understand this and to learn from it. And I don't think that most people are understanding it properly, but I think I can help break it down. And in particular, my guests can help break it down. So today I'm bringing on Steve Malloy of junkscience.com. And I'm bringing on Steve, let me put it this way. I generally only listen to predictions of the future from people who acknowledge the present. And most people who predict the future on climate and energy don't even acknowledge the present. But the best thing is to get an account of the future from people who actually predicted the present. And Steve is one of them, and I think I am one of them. So I thought I'd bring on Steve to describe the current situation and tell us what it means for the future. So Steve Malloy, welcome back to Power Hour.
Hey, Alex. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, great to have you. So most of the time we're going to actually be looking at some charts, including many you've shared, but just give us your overview of what is happening in Texas right now. Because I think the general public is just getting the sense, oh, there's a really bad storm and there are some blackouts and that's sad, but at least President Biden will send some nice federal aid and then we can forget about it.
Yeah, he's already declared an emergency and setting funds down there. So this is really the culmination of the war against fossil fuels. Texas has put itself in a position where it's reliant on wind, and they got some really bad extreme weather, ice freezing the windmills. And guess what? The windmills don't work when they're frozen. So they've got rolling blackouts going through the state. There are, 2.3 million, 2.6 million people without electricity. And it's going to be that way for the next day or so. It's just been a disaster. And, as you mentioned earlier in the lead up, you and me and others have been predicting this. And this is going to keep happening because we keep mindlessly switching to these unreliable sources of electricity. And, this is not a situation where, know, it's not okay to have electricity half the time or most of the time or almost all of the time. Our civilization is based on having electricity all of the time. And when we don't have electricity all of the time, it's a massive failure.
Yeah, so let's talk about, like, let's go back 20 years ago before all the different pressures for unreliables, and we'll talk about some of them. What would this have looked like 20 years ago in Texas dealing with these kinds of weather conditions?
Well, you know, there'd still be difficulties, but, you know, you wouldn't have your grid relying on windmills that are frozen. Instead, you would have to have heavy machinery, you know, digging out maybe frozen coal piles, but the coal would be there. You could shovel it into the machines at the rate you want, into the boilers at the rate you wanted, and you would have electricity. You wouldn't have this kind of situation. You know, even with natural gas, you need natural gas would be flowing through the pipelines and, you know, providing electricity. You know, Texas has never been dependent on something that could freeze up like this. Natural gas and coal don't work this way. I mean, there are issues with them. You know, if you want to burn more natural gas, it only comes through the pipe at 22 miles an hour. So that's kind of a limitation. You know, one advantage of coal is there, you know, you got your pile of coal right outside your, you know, operator's window. They can load that into the boiler as fast as they want. But, you know, you don't have this kind of, you know, tragedy that we're seeing now in Texas.
All right. So I'm going to now pull up for the viewers. You're going to be able to see now. And so now, Steve, they're going to be deprived of our lovely faces, but they're going to be seeing some graphics. And I know you can't see them on your screen, but you've seen all of these. So I'm just going to start off and I'll describe them to you and you can sort of shed some light on them. So one is one that I've shared, which, and I'm sure you've seen this one. So this is from, I guess this is, wait, is this might be, this is a MISO one. I meant to have a actual Texas one. Let's see if I have a Texas one. So MISO is mid-continent, so it's related. Okay, so this is a, well, you can see on Twitter, I posted the ERCOT one, but it's basically, you see at the bottom, it's one of these things where you have at the bottom red for coal, and then you have, rather, red for nuclear, brown for coal, light brown for gas, and then green for wind and yellow for solar. And what you see is in Texas, and it's even more pronounced than the one people can see on the screen because this is for the Midwest, you see that nuclear is totally steady, coal is sort of at its high, and gas is skyrocketing, and then wind has almost completely disappeared when it's needed most. And it's just going up. It's going up like that. So that vindicates what we're saying, right? That this is like you have these controllable sources, particularly gas, and then the ones you were relying on just didn't do the job.
Well, yeah. And for the last, 5 to 10 years, Texas has been shedding coal plants from its grid and replacing them with wind. And, you know, that's okay during the spring and fall and maybe sometimes during the summer, you know, when it's not too hot. You know, a lot of times you can have that much wind. But in these extreme conditions, like we're seeing today, you got to have fossil fuels, you got to have natural gas, and you got to have coal or nuclear. There's nothing else. There's no substitute.
Well, I would just add, though, I mean, in a sense, I think of it more as they're trying to get away with it. Because one point I make about the unreliables is they don't get rid of the reliable infrastructure, so they always add costs. And I see you have debates with different people who will say, oh, yeah, solar is cheap and wind is cheap, but they never look at the system costs, let alone right. The system costs involved in blackouts. So I think of it as people are – it's not cost effective on almost any scale to use wind, but people have been trying to get away with using as much wind as they can to meet these kinds of arbitrary targets. And they've been increasing prices and decreasing reliability. So my view is it's never been a good idea. What's your view?
Yeah, solar and wind are not cheaper ever really than natural gas and coal because you have to maintain this other infrastructure. And if you only use coal and natural gas sporadically or when you have to, then when you need them, it's really expensive to run them. And right now in Texas, you know, power is like $9,000 per megawatt hour, and that, you know, that's where it's capped. You know, my basic sort of debunking of this notion that wind and solar are cheaper, well, why is the rest of the world building coal and natural gas or nuclear? There's, you know, wind and solar are not the first choice because they're not the cheapest. I mean, that is, you know, they're cheapest if you put all these artificial costs on coal and then, you know, you only let coal run like on a day like today in Texas, yeah, that's going to be really expensive. But what does it cost to run solar at night or wind when it doesn't blow? Well, you know, it costs human tragedy.
Right. So, I mean, the concept I think of in terms of a lot is just long-term system cost. So I think I've talked about this with Meredith Angwin and others. I mean, a lot of these prices that exist today, when people talk about prices, these are not free markets with real competition. These are prices based on arbitrary pricing policies set by a monopoly that are rigged for solar and wind. And I think, right, if we look at this image right now, so I'll describe it to you. So on the lower right, we have, this is the one where Texas is all red, dark red, which means $9,000. $9,000 a megawatt hour. So that's $9 a kilowatt hour. So to put that in context, if you have a 100 kilowatt hour Tesla, that's $900 to fill it up if you were paying those prices.
Yeah.
So
that's the wholesale price.
Yeah, that's the wholesale price, right? That's not the retail. So this is getting to you as a consumer one way or another. And then on the upper left, so on the lower left, it says, this is ERCOT. It's saying rotating outages in progress, which is a euphemism for blackouts all over the place. And then you have this forecast earlier in the day, and I'm not sure exactly how it's shaking out, but it's something like this, where there's the capacity, like even with all of your reserves versus the forecasted demand. And there's a 10 gigawatt difference. So the way I'd put that is that's something like 5 million homes or 8 of the DeLoreans from Back to the Future, you know, which are 1.21 gigawatts, or they call it gigawatts, but it's the same thing. So there's something going on where when you're depending on all of this wind, it's actually so expensive, plus unreliable. What is the cost of a blackout? Like, what is the cost of industry to industry? And who's going to want to set up industry in Texas in the future if this is a situation? You mentioned China. Like, China, last time I checked, is 5 times our industrial electricity use, and they're 2/3 coal. So what do you think of this idea that, oh, well, China is leading the way? Larry Fink says, you know, they signed a historic climate agreement, and Biden says they're going to eat our lunch with renewables. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, China's leading the way and being for China. I mean, let's keep in mind that, you know, China's number one goal is to be the lone global superpower by 2049. It is not to be carbon neutral by any date in particular, nor do they really care about that. They're burning coal and natural gas and gasoline as they can. They love fossil fuel. And they're happy to, you know, use all that power to make the solar crap that they sell to Americans. You know, China is going to do what makes sense for China. You know, we've adopted this policy. We're going to, you know, the central planning feature of our government is going to be trying to get the weather right. And I don't even know what that means, because I don't know what the right weather is. But it's just, you know, they have a much more serious focus about what they're trying to do. They have an actual goal. We really don't.
So just to put this same chart in context, or set of charts in context, I thought I would look back and look at some of the headlines that are praising Texas for wind, because this is a kind of common thing. And what happens is, when the wind happens to be blowing under ideal conditions and when the weather is mild, you get a celebratory media article saying, hey, X percent is powered by wind. So like Financial Times, wind power overtakes coal in Texas electricity generation. Wind power surged past coal in Texas electricity mix for the first time in 2020, the latest sign of renewable energy's rising prominence in America's fossil fuel heartland. Wind turbines generated nearly a quarter of Texas's power in 2020, but they're not stressing this is unreliable. And so it's not available when you need it necessarily. And it's a pain to deal with, because you have to cycle up your reliable power plants. You have to cycle them up and down like stop and go traffic. And I'm just looking, like, Clean Technica, you know, what I regard as a propaganda site. Texas wind power dominates coal in crossover. Well, which one are people wanting now? Like, do they want more coal or more wind turbines?
Well, this is the thing I mentioned earlier. You know, we don't want power half the time, most of the time, almost all the time. We want power all the time. And, you know, this notion that, you know, wind can supply more power than coal, yeah, that can happen. I mean, it's happening in Europe, also in Germany. But right now, if you look at Germany, it's 80% coal, because in extreme weather, in cold weather, the wind doesn't really blow that much. And you need coal. And if you don't have any coal, if you just have wind, you're not going to have any grid. And the same is true in Texas and everywhere across this country. If you don't have coal or natural gas or nuclear, some base load power, you're out of luck. There's no amount of wind and solar that can make up for that.
So let's take this issue. So some people have been countering to me. I don't know if they've been countering to you. They're saying, well, actually, you know, there's natural gas capacity offline. Actually, fossil fuels aren't doing their job. What's your take on that?
Well, look, in extreme weather, everything is going to have problems. As I mentioned, you know, you need to burn more gas. The gas only comes in at 22 miles an hour. If it's really cold and you get an ice storm like this, you know, your coal is going to be, you know, iced over unless you take a proper preparation. So there, you know, it is possible to have problems. And certainly, you know, there have been grid failures in the past on fossil fuels. But what we're seeing today is nothing like that. I mean, we are seeing a grid that is entirely really dependent on wind. They expect to get, you know, 69,000. They have this capacity of 69,000 megawatts. And they're, you know, getting less than half of that. And it's just unacceptable. It's not a way to maintain. It's not a serious way to run a grid. But, you know, because of political correctness, this is how they designed it now. So this is the problem. And it's going to be like this when it's really hot and really cold. And, you know, if you believe, you know, IPCC climate science, there's going to be more hot, more extreme weather. And what are we going to do? We're not going to have any electricity.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the reason why just getting rid of reliable sources of energy is not a serious thing, no matter what you're thinking about in terms of climate. And I'd say part of, I think, what we're both advocating, so in contrast maybe to some other people, to my knowledge, both of us are big advocates of nuclear, of coal, of gas, and of using the most cost-effective solution for the situation. So it's very possible that if Texas were doing long-term system cost analysis, it would have a lot more nuclear, which is not anywhere near as weather-dependent as these other things. And I do think there is a bias on our grid against coal. Like, people are not taking seriously enough that coal has on-site fuel storage. You mentioned that gas travels at like just a little over 20 miles an hour. Yeah, especially in a world where we've got a lot of pipeline opposition and where even without that, you can have issues with pipelines. Yeah, you don't want your whole electricity supply dependent on natural gas. You actually want to make decisions by long-term system cost analysis with reliability at a premium and trying to cut costs. And I think if they did that, and they talk about like natural gas things being offline, but part of what happens with the way the pricing works and the money works is when you overpay for this unreliable stuff, you underpay for reliable stuff. And so they don't build enough reliable infrastructure. And that's always the game that they try to play. They always try to use their reliable infrastructure as little as possible to keep their costs low. That's what happened in California this past summer. So let me see what else we can bring up. So let's talk about, you've been doing a really good job of sharing stories from around the world. Actually, let me just, here, any other thoughts? I want to pull up one graphic for people. Any additional thoughts for now?
Well, just, you know, to what you were saying, you know, our grid should be designed around providing electricity 100% of the time and then at the lowest cost. But right now we're designing grids based on political correctness. You know, I mean, climate is driving everyone, you know, to insanity. And as a result, we're jeopardizing our grid. You know, we live in a dangerous world. We actually do have, you know, geopolitical competitors. We have economic competitors. And we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, if not the head.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I just want to make the point that there is you can always support nuclear. So the whole anti-fossil fuel movement is basically the same movement as the anti-nuclear movement. So it's not, it's this false thing that, oh, they're just trying to lower carbon. No, well, if they were trying to lower CO2, they'd be very pro-nuclear.
And I don't even know what's being accomplished. I mean, if you look at, you know, UN reports on emissions are, they're going up with no end in sight. And so we're paying more for electricity. We're having less reliable electricity and we're not really accomplishing anything. And, you know, there's a lot, China's got a lot more development ahead of it. India, Africa, we haven't even talked about Africa. In Africa, 600 million people don't have access to reliable electricity. So we're not accomplishing anything. We're hurting ourselves for no reason.
Yeah, it has a very symbolic kind of quality, but it's just a pure unilateral sacrifice. So just FYI, I pulled up, before I had accidentally the MISO graph, but now I have, so viewers can see the Texas one, and it's much more dramatic because it has the gas just dramatically escalating. And I think we should just be so grateful to the people in the nuclear industry, the coal industry, the natural gas industry. I mean, because if we had had these mandates, even more of these mandates foisted on us, it would be even more of a catastrophe. Now,
SAFE, our natural gas pipelines.
Pipelines are the safest, most reliable way to move gas. In fact, you really can't move natural gas any other way. You can't get to a home, you can't get to a manufacturing facility without the use of a pipeline.
The amount of savings a customer is seeing is on average $2,000 a year. Think about that, $2,000 in savings.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Resist the understandable urge to drink their award-winning sauces straight from the bottle. Although if that's your thing, we won't judge. Greenlee's Bold and Spicy Pure Rebel Sauce, Ozark Hillbilly Sauce, and Sweet and Tangy Premium Finishing Sauce. Handcrafted and homemade. Yeah, you can order the sauces online and drool over the menu too. Greenlee'sBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue. Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor, the producer of the program here. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we will explore jobs in the gas and the energy industries. Jobs, not only jobs, but careers, may I remind you. So we'll do that in just a couple of minutes, the job segment. But first, it's time for the top five stories of the past week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. That's MarcellusDrilling.com is the website. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So once again, this week we have for you a listing of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, DRBC frack ban heading for defeat in October trial. In January, MDN told you that after 5 long years, a federal judge in Scranton had finally ruled the Wayne Land and Mineral Group, WLMG, versus Delaware River Basin Commission, DRBC, lawsuit will go to trial this year. We've since learned the trial is set to begin in October. Andrew Maycuth, ace reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, chronicles the journey of this lawsuit and what it means for landowners and environmentalists. There is nothing particularly new or noteworthy in the article that you get here on this entry in MarcellusDrilling.com. You've read it all on MDN in the past. The article does, however, provide the entire well-written story in one place. And in there, you'll read the history of the lawsuit from the beginning and what lies ahead as this case is decided. This is the end game. We're not 100% certain, but we'd lay 90 to 95% odds that the DRBC is going to lose the lawsuit and lose the right to ban fracking in the Delaware River Basin. Look for the DRBC to try and slither out of this lawsuit by attempting to settle ahead of the trial. That's our prediction. We hope Kurt Cocodrilli
and his WMLG pushes ahead and defeats the DRBC once and for all. Rusty?
DC number four, Governor Wolf admits carbon tax will close coal and gas-fired plants. Now, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is openly admitting that his cockamamie plan to force Pennsylvania to join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a carbon tax scheme that will cost Pennsylvania residents $2.36 billion over the next 10 years, will in fact cause the closure of gas and coal-fired power plants throughout the state. Now, Wolf's brilliant plan is to overcome the big negatives of power plant closings, a new government program funded by taxpayers. Wolf is proposing under his just-announced 2021 budget plan to create the Energy Communities Trust Fund. The fund will provide direct support to dislocated workers and communities experiencing impacts from the closure of existing power plants. Wolf will use $300 million of the $2.36 billion raise, that's 13%, from the carbon tax to fund the new program. So Wolf will slap Pennsylvanians with a new carbon tax of $2.36 billion and return just 13% of that to some of the people affected, those losing their high-paying jobs of operating power plants. This is typical big government dysfunction on full display. Create a huge problem, then solve it by throwing a little bit of money at it. DC?
All right. The third most popular story over the past week, how Biden's drilling ban on federal lands affects the Marcellus Utica. On Joe Biden's first day in occupying the White House, he signed an executive order suspending new oil and gas leasing while the Interior Department reviews existing leases and permitting practices for 60 days. The aim is to make the federal lease ban permanent. However, some permits on existing leases will continue to be issued during the 60-day review period. You may think Biden's federal lease ban does not affect the Marcellus Utica region. You would be wrong. Each of the three states with active MU drilling hosts a national park, in other words, federal land. Two of the three national parks have the potential for shale drilling. First and foremost is Wayne National Forest in the Ohio Utica. With Biden's executive order, the BLM will no longer offer any more parcels in WNF, the Wayne National Forest, for leasing, denying private property owners their rights under the U.S. Constitution. Rusty?
DC number two, Alta Resources shopping a $547,000 Marcellus acres, asking $3 billion. Now, we don't write much about Alta Resources. It's a shale drilling company co-founded by the inventor of shale fracking, George Mitchell. But that doesn't mean Alta doesn't drill in the Marcellus. The company owns some 547,000 acres producing natural gas from approximately 900 wells in the Marcellus Shale across Bradford, Wyoming, Sullivan, Lycoming, Clinton, and Center counties in northeast Pennsylvania. Alta is shopping all of their considerable Marcellus assets, looking for a buyer. At least that's the rumor, according to Reuters. And frankly, we've never known Reuters to report on a rumor like this, and it turned out to be wrong. According to Resources, who spoke to Reuters, Alta wants to cash in and sell its Marcellus assets for more than $3 billion. Just for context, EQT recently closed on a deal to buy Chevron's roughly 400,000 acres, with 500 producing wells and another 100 wells in progress for $735 million. It's a lot of dough, DC.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Well, here comes the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Seneca adding another rig in Tioga County, Pennsylvania, thanks to pipe expansion. Last Friday, National Fuel Gas Company, NFG, the parent company for Seneca Resources and Empire Pipeline, issued its latest quarterly update for the quarter ending December 31st. Among the pearls of good news for NFG is that the company is adding a rig back in Tioga County, Pennsylvania, to drill on acreage NFG purchased from Shell. The added rig is due to a pipeline project coming online. Pipeline giant Williams is expanding capacity along its mighty Transco pipeline. In December 2018, Williams announced a new project to increase capacity along the Transco pipeline in Pennsylvania by an extra 582 MMF CFD. I can't remember what that
multi-million,
was.
Multi-million cubic feet.
Thank you. I don't work in the industry, in case you couldn't tell. The purpose of Leidy South is to connect Huge supplies of natural gas in the Marcellus and Utica producing regions in Pennsylvania, with markets along the Atlantic seaboard by the 2021-2022 winter heating season. Some of the extra capacity along the Transco as a result of the Leidy South expansion is contracted by NFG. Last December, Williams reported that 125 MMCFD of the 582 MMCF per D expansion had already come online. Because Leidy South is now partially online with the rest coming online this year. NFG has decided to add a rig back in Tioga County to begin drilling in that area. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your patience with me through that. I'm a radio guy. Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. And it's easier to read it than to listen to me try to read it. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at MarcellusDrilling.com/email. Thank you, Jim Willis, for MarcellusDrilling.com. Wonderful website. And onto the job segment now. Your careers in the gas and energy industries, sponsored by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. Easy for you to say. Those MMCFBs are really tough to get out sometimes.
It's a long
Pennsylvania, DC, Seneca Resources looking for a field operations supervisor based in Oil City, of course. Diversified Gas and Oil has an opening for an EH&S environmental specialist out of Waynesburg. Marathon Petroleum Corporation, a maintenance mechanic headquartered in Washington, Pennsylvania. WOC Energy and HVAC technician, that's out of Towanda. UGI Utilities Alignment, that's out of 44th. The DDS Companies, a project manager for energy services out of Canonsburg near Pittsburgh. Venture Engineering and Construction Incorporated, looking for a field engineer out of Warrendale. Resource Energy, looking for an energy business development manager out of Philadelphia. People's Natural Gas has an opening for an asset survey specialist headquartered in Pittsburgh. And Gas Search Drilling Services, that's the arm of Cabot Oil and Gas, a backhoe operator, roustabouts, and CDL truck drivers, many openings headquartered in Montrose. Now in Ohio, Edison Energy, an opening for a systems administrator based in Dublin. TriStar, TruStar Energy, a field service technician headquartered in Columbus. CECO, environmental, looking for an applications engineer out of Cincinnati. Park Energy Services, a field technician based in St. Clairsville. The Energy Transfer Family of Partnerships, an electrical technician opening out of Fostoria. The Energy Cooperative, looking for multi-laborers out of Hebron. Middle Ohio Pipeline Services, pipeline welders, that would be shielded metal arc, flux core stick. It's out of the entire state of Ohio. Gulfport Energy, a control room technician based in St. Clairsville. Southern Cross Field Services, a field technician for electric metering. It's out of Cincinnati. And TC Energy, an opening for a heavy equipment operator at Sugar Grove. Now in West Virginia, Dominion Energy, a pipeline field specialist headquartered in Danville. Apex Energy Services, an oil field pressure washer, laborers, and roustabouts. That's hired hands out of Wheeling. Certified Pressure Testing, LLC, looking for an oil field hands and laborers, multiple openings out of Ellensboro. Select Energy Services, a water transfer operator out of St. Mary's. Shale Pro Energy Services, an opening for a measurement technician headquartered in Clarksburg. Pillar Innovations, an instrumentation technician out of Morgantown. Also in Morgantown, Southwest Energy looking for roughnecks. And also the Beitzel Corporation looking for multiple roustabouts in field services. All three of those companies based in Morgantown. Moving to New York State, Seneca Resources, an opening for a regulatory analyst out of Williamsville. Marathon Energy Corporation, an energy analyst out of Woodside. The DDS companies, again, looking for project managers for Energy Services Division out of West Henrietta. CS Energy, an assistant project manager that's based in the state capital of Albany. The United States Department of Energy, looking for a student trainee in civil engineering for the entire Empire State of New York. New York State Electric and Gas, an opening for a lead supervisor in their gas engineering district. It's out of Binghamton. And Enterprise Products, looking for multiple technicians and pipeline operators. That's out of Oneonta, New York. And those, as DC mentioned, were the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. your futures with natural gas and the energy industry in general, of course, right here on the Shale Gas News. And we thank you for listening each and every week on our network of stations, Gem 104, and online all the time at talkwilliamsport.com. We'll see you back here next week, same time, same radio stations, and online for Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, producer of this program, DC Taylor, and yours truly, Rusty Fender. Thank you for listening to Shale Gas News.